This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on the Escape Hour this morning with Russ and Fiona. Tad is still on vacation, but that's why we call it the Escape Hour, because we get out and about. And today we will be talking about Tad's actual spiritual, or not just spiritual, but actual home, New York City.
Start spreading the news,
Fee. We're starting to spread the news. You got it right. And with us today is Alistair McMurray, who is a chef and has worked at 11 Madison Park, the number one restaurant on the globe, and lived in New York for a year, and is here to tell us all about it. Welcome to the Escape Hour, Al.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Stoked to be here.
There's so many things that we want to ask about, you know, what it means to work in the number one restaurant in the world. Of course, it's set in, I mean, for those people who don't know, 11 Madison Park won the restaurant of the year last year. It's located on the 24th Street and Madison Avenue, the glorious Madison Avenue overlooking Madison Park. And it's absolutely stunning area. I have not been to the restaurant because even though I lived in New York for quite a long time, I did not have the kind of money that it would take to dine at this beautiful restaurant. But should I go
nothing
back?
Nothing wrong with a pizza at Hellfire Kitchen, let me tell you.
I had a lot of pizza as well. But should I be able to go back, I will be saving my pennies so I get to go again. Now, Al, I would love to know more. So this restaurant, it wins the best restaurant of the year. You happened to be working there at that moment. What was your role in the kitchen?
So starting in the kitchen, I was just a line cook. I went over in April to do a trial to try and get the job in the first place. Had to do a full stage, whole day in the kitchen, had to put up a dish. They just give you a piece of protein, or they can give you a vegetable and just say, you have 1 hour, bring us a dish. So put up a nice dish, got the job. Then started the visa process when I got back home and managed to go over a few months later. So I started there in July 2016. And what they do there is they get everybody to start kind of at the bottom of the ladder. Everybody's kind of doing the necessary but mundane tasks of like...
chopping the onions?
Even more mundane, like...
oh.
Perfect kernels of corn. Like, you've got to just fill containers of it, like double-shucking peas, like peeling trays and trays of tomatoes, and then you kind of work your way up from there, just so you have respect for the people at the bottom, because they'll be handing this prep to you and you just have more respect because you've had to do it yourself. So you work your way through the garmanger section, which is quite intricate.
You might need to give us an explanation of what the garmanger section
the cold,
is.
The cold food. So there would be everybody that eats at 11 Madison Park will have a tower of hors d'oeuvres to start.
Did you say a tower of hors d'oeuvres?
A tower of hors d'oeuvres that kind of disassembles like a babushka doll, and every layer has a different bite on it. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds extraordinary.
No, I don't want to spoil it for you when you go, but that's kind of one of the things that has kind of stayed there, and ooh, they'll just change it with the season. So really fun, and that takes two chefs to assemble, so it's like you might be responsible for just two bites of that. So it's everything is just super intricate. And there'll be like somebody on the caviar section, somebody on the cold appetizer section or entree in Australia, and then from there is a fish line with that is a hot section, and that has three chefs on it. There's the fish roast in charge of kind of the protein and the sauces, and then the fish entremet, which is in charge of the garnishes of that dish, and also vegetarian dishes, and then a hot appetizer section, which is in charge of kind of smaller warm bites at the beginning, and also the sides for the mains, which is, you might think I'm getting sides with my mains and you think nothing of it, but it's one chef's entire job.
That's extraordinary. So how many chefs were working in this one particular kitchen?
Oh, God, there must be 50... employed chefs there. Not all in the kitchen at one time. It's kind of broken into two teams. You've got your AM team and your PM team, and they do lunches on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. So your AM team will come in at, say, 6:30 in the morning, prep until midday, do a lunch service, do a little bit of prep after service, setting up their counterpart for the dinner service, and then the dinner chef will kind of jump onto that section. The morning chef will go home, and then so in that few hours crossover when both teams are in, it is very tight for space, and that's when it's just like very intimidating to walk into. That's when I walked in on my trial, when every chef in the building was there, and I just thought, what have I got myself into? It's like the military, how precise it is, and perfect uniforms and big toque hats. And
wow, and you were nervous coming in here and being on radio. If you experienced that, then surely you could do anything.
I was going to say, now, Al, you can't just say you're a bit of a chef from Aussie and then go over there and going in for a bit of an interview and make a dish and then get the job. You're pretty good at what you do, aren't you?
I've been lucky enough to be invited back as well.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that is fantastic news. So may I ask, what prompted you to get into this industry and become a chef? And in what is, I mean, we have discussed on this program many, many times the challenges for chefs with the issues around overwork and depression and so on and so forth. I mean, it's a really tough industry. How did you decide to go into this?
I think when I was young, I just kind of cooking shows would be on, and things like watching Jamie cook and how fun, and he just was very infectious to watch. Like, I just thought, he's having so much fun, and that just looks like, if I had have known what it was like, I'm not sure I would have thought about it like that at the time, but that definitely made me think I would love to cook and just have fun doing that. I never thought, I kind of knew what I was doing from primary school. I can't remember a single time when I thought I wanted to be a chef. I just don't remember ever not wanting to be one. Wow. So it's hard to pinpoint. And then, yeah, I was like 15, 16 and washing dishes in kind of local restaurants. And again, just the vibe in kitchens is amazing and fun to be around. And it just makes getting out of bed worthwhile. And, yeah, then you just form very tight groups of friends, and out of work, it's super fun. It's the hours can be harrowing, but I think if it's the people that are around that get you through that.
Well, it is a pretty tight network, and you've got to watch out on a Monday, Sunday or a Monday night, Ross, when the hospo guys and girls are out on the town. Watch out, because, you know,
they're letting their hair down, aren't they?
Yeah, they're letting their hair down.
Imagine what that'd be like in New York. How much fun would that be?
Yeah, we would get complaints from the neighbours saying it's 2:30 in the morning, keep it down, we got work in the morning, and we just respond, well, we have work in the morning as well, so don't worry about it.
So true. If you ever stick around a restaurant long enough to be in the pack-up time, the heavy metal goes on and the kitchen staff are all packing up to the loudest music. It would drive anyone out. But I guess
sounds fantastic.
They look like they're having a good time.
Yeah, just running on pure adrenaline, I think.
Absolutely.
I think you'd make a good new Jamie Oliver. You could be Australia's version of Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, handsome.
Yeah, that's right. He's got the look.
Face for radio.
Yeah. Oh, we've all got those. Don't worry about that.
Exactly.
You know, in our day, in Fiona's and my day, it was Bernard King. Do you remember Bernard King on TV? He was our TV
King.
Chef then.
Oh, don't forget Peter Russell Clark.
Oh,
Russell Clark.
And also there was Margaret Fulton, you know, good old Madge.
Well, Margaret Fulton's cookbook is a classic these days.
And, that's right. Of course, names that they don't know in New York, but, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, of course it is.
My mum's got Delia, the Delia cookbook. That's the go-to.
Okay, is that the one to go to?
Well, no, I guess we
So were you nervous when you went for this big job in New York?
Incredibly, just because I was only in – I'd flown to New York on, like, a temporary visa with the hope of – getting a job, and then did a few stages at different restaurants.
Just clarify, a stage is like work experience, is that correct?
It's kind of working for free, as it's kind of a win-win that they will get free labor and you'll kind of pick their brains and see some of their ideas. So it's like a trial, but generally unpaid.
Okay. Anyway, back to what we were saying. Sorry, I just thought we'd interrupt.
Oh, sorry, yeah. So I'd lined up six different restaurants, and I was there for 8 days, so I had six stages in different restaurants, and just you kind of do whichever prep they need and help out with plating and whatnot, put dishes up if they ask, and then if you have to put your own dish up, and then they'll just see like if you're worth hiring. And so it was quite tricky. The visa I needed sponsorship, so kind of the smaller, more intimate restaurants, which I'm like a huge fan of, weren't really up for sponsoring a chef to come over, whereas I kind of needed that bigger restaurant, which was fantastic still, because I went over there with 11 Madison Park as the dream, really, and it just all worked out for me, which is fantastic. I got like four offers, I think, saying yes, we'd love to have you, and just them saying yes, I just couldn't
say no. Incredible. Yeah. How exciting.
No.
Well, we're talking to Al McMurray all about New York City, chefing in New York City.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
We are here today on Joy 94.9 to talk about New York. Now, we've met the chef, Al, who's an amazing fellow.
Yeah.
Where did they live? What did they do? Can we introduce his beautiful girlfriend now? That would be lovely.
We can introduce his beautiful girlfriend, Marina. Hello, Marina. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, guys.
Well, it's so nice to have the two of you here, because now we can hear both about your life and loves and experiences in New York City. You lived there for 1 year. And what part of Manhattan were you living in?
We weren't in Manhattan,
actually. Oh, you were living in Brooklyn?
No, we were in Brooklyn. We were in Williamsburg, just over the bridge. Just take the L train one stop when it decided to run. And it was a pretty...
unreliable.
Well, you know, but I like Brooklyn. You know,
it was fantastic.
My last trip to New York was last year, and we decided we'd explore Brooklyn for the first time ever, and loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Well, you know, Brooklyn is certainly a massive area, and it's become so popular. And there's so many different parts of Brooklyn that you can stay in, whether it's Park Slope or Greenpoint, or you know, around the more urban areas of Dumbo, which means something like. Something
down under
the Manhattan, Brooklyn
overpass.
Dumbo.
We got there.
Yeah Dumbo. That was becoming a hip neighborhood when I left there. But then again, I left New York in 2000, so it's already a really long time ago.
So how did you find your place? What was, you know, if anyone's interested in moving to New York, what did you do? Was it hit the pavement? Yeah.
We used Facebook, Street Easy, Craigslist.
The one that we found it on, actually...
Oh, Stephanie's Listing, I think it was, and it's some email that you subscribe to, and this lady, Stephanie, she just sends out all of these listings every Wednesday.
Oh, cool. Oh,
fantastic. Yeah. That's a great service.
Yeah, it was a full-time job finding an apartment, so definitely recommend finding it before you start work, because...
Yeah, well, we used to use the Village Voice back then, and there would be a big queue on a Tuesday night to get the Village Voice where it was first dropped off for everyone to, because the competition, obviously, for apartments is always going to be fantastic, very, very busy. But you found your place, and then, of course, you explored the beautiful. Like, I know that you lived in Brooklyn. Did you have a favourite part of Brooklyn? Was it where you lived, or did you discover other parts of Brooklyn that you loved?
Definitely fell in love with Williamsburg.
Yeah.
Traveled a little bit within Brooklyn. So, like, the Bushwick area, Greenpoint, also amazing. Park Slope, where you were saying. We went down to Red Hook, and they've got amazing, like, American-style barbecue down there at a place called Hometown, and it's, like, all their meat's cooked overnight over smoke. And
wow. Delicious. Well, American-style barbecue is huge in Australia, as we know. I don't eat American-style barbecue, or any style barbecue, for that matter, unfortunately, nor do you, Russ.
No, well, I just find it, when I did eat meat, I found it very sugary.
Yes,
the Americans sauces. Like to put a lot of sugar in their in
they
their barbecue.
Sure
they really do.
One of my favourite Thanksgiving dishes was mashed sweet potato with marshmallows in it. Yeah, so they mashed the sweet potato in the pot, and then they put the marshmallows on top, put the lid on till it melted, and then mush it in. But we're getting...
We digress.
Because America. America.
America. Yeah. It all's happened in America, isn't it? I'm curious to... were you there for Christmas? I noticed I've got a friend who moved to New York only 18 months ago, and she was saying that she's had a crazy busy week in Manhattan, and it was stressful, and she was so glad to be going home to Brooklyn last night. But what really made her week was as she left her office, it was snowing, and she thought, God, this is so beautiful,
yep.
And had to pinch herself again. I can't believe I'm here.
We were there this time last year, and it was snow. I wasn't sure if it snowed on Christmas Day, but in the lead up, we went like ice skating at Rockefeller Center, and they're playing the Home Alone soundtrack, and it was snowing then, and that was very surreal.
Yeah. Going to the plaza, having a look around. Can't afford to get anything there, but I've just looked around.
It just might dump Christmas. With snow one day in Manhattan, and then you wouldn't know because they're so thorough at cleaning all the streets, and then you go home to Brooklyn and it's just a slushy mess and nobody cares about old Brooklyn, like, as long as Manhattan's looking pristine.
Well, one of the strangest days, I woke up and there was no noise.
Oh.
And I was like, well, hang on. This happens very rarely when the dump of snow is so great overnight and before it's been cleaned up and people are skiing, cross-country skiing through Central Park. And anyway... There are some times where the extraordinary happens.
So did you have a beautiful sleepless in Seattle moment up at the top of the Empire State Building one night?
I don't think we went up the top once.
Oh, didn't you? You must have gone to the Rock. Did you top of the Rock?
Forgot to play tourist.
That's the thing. I feel when you move there, you're not going to do the touristy things. I didn't go to the Met until June of this year. Yeah. Central Park, didn't really venture up there that often. It was only when we had family and friends in town that you
showed them around.
I need to do some touristy things. It's a bit slack.
And you did some travelling outside of New York, of course, because what a lot of people don't realise is New York City and the five boroughs that go around New York City are actually just at the base of a very large state, which has an enormous amount of incredible mountains and scenery, and which is really rather stunning. So you checked out some of the rest of New York State?
Yeah, so we would catch I think it was called the Metro North,
mm-hmm.
head upstate New York, and in fall, so autumn, like, everybody loves to get up there because the leaves turn
spectacular.
All the colours, oh my goodness, it's amazing. And so we were up near the Culinary Institute of America, CIA, is in Poughkeepsie there, mm-hmm. and we ventured up there and had a little tour and little Airbnb overnight, and that was a great getaway. And then another time we went a little bit further on the train to Blue Hill at Stone Barns, which is
Dan Barber's. Let's talk about Blue Hill. So there's a restaurant called Blue Hill, which is in the West Village.
Yes.
And this is Stone Farms, which is their regional place.
Yeah, so it's a restaurant set on an actual, like, working farm.
So the whole thing with the whole ethos of Blue Hills is that it's all local produce, and then a lot of the produce comes from the farm, which is, what is that, like 2 hours outside of New York or a bit further?
So I think an hour and a half on the train it might have taken us.
Yeah, yep.
It's definitely a trip. You need hire a car as well. Like, yeah. It's near nothing.
Right, but it was definitely worth a visit out there. You would highly recommend it.
Oh, highly. Definitely. It did a massive leap in the top 50 world's best mm-hmm. this year. I think mm-hmm. they were 48 and they jumped down to 11, which is, like,
wow, that's
super
incredible.
Well earned. Biggest jump of the list this year, and definitely well earned. We got, like, we were just getting educated the entire time about things that we thought we knew, and we got a big tour of the farm before you even sat down. Managed to have a little conversation with the chef as well.
Yeah, the chef
bumped
and
into
Aaron.
Him. And you don't get a menu there. You kind of just get dishes, and they'll just say it's the best things from the fields, the pastures, the forests, the dairies, and the greenhouses. And you just completely are in their hands. And you might eat 30 things, but one thing might be one bite.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And the amazing thing that he's doing, he's working with the Department of Plant Breedings and Genetics at Cornell University, and he asks them to breed vegetables more for the taste than for the yield, which is...
Of course, commercial vegetable growing has done for years where they just genetically modify things to produce the most
exactly for
numbers.
Money.
What's the name of the chef behind Blue Hills?
Dan Barber.
Oh, actually, I
he's
do
got a
know
chef's
it.
Table episode, yes, if you ever saw
on
that.
I have heard a lot about it, and I know that there's a couple of well-known chefs in Melbourne that would love to bring Dan Barber out to Australia for Melbourne Food and Wine. I've had this conversation a number of times with people because the work that he's done, he's so well-known around the world, his philosophy around reducing waste and food wastage and so on and so forth. He's really a very inspirational.
Yeah, fantastic guy.
And so passionate about what he does. You can really see it and then you taste it in his food.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
If I can make it there.
Nine, Australia's best radio station.
You're on the Escape Hour. This is Joy 94.9. That was Frank Sinatra. Good old... What did they call Frank?
They called him many names.
Did they? Yes, he was one of the members of the Brat Pack, wasn't he? He was.
And you know, most famously, there's a fantastic movie about when he was in Australia and how they had to throw him out of the country or something because he tried to beat up somebody or, you know, too many martinis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love a martini.
I'm going to ask. Most. I've got to know, where was your favourite bar in New York, guys? Come on, you're a couple of young whippersnappers.
What do you think?
That's a good question. Oh, God, I'm going to have to give a shout-out to a terrible bar across the road from 11 Madison Park where we would go every night called Live Bait.
Live Bait?
Yes, that's still there.
Yes, it's... I can't believe I'm promoting it, but it was just the chef's hangout after work for... shot and a beer, Boilermaker.
Yeah, you'd get a shot and a beer. Sometimes they wouldn't even charge us.
No, great. Yeah. They looked after us a lot. We were like family to them, and when they came into the restaurant, they were like family to us. So they scratched our back and we scratched theirs. But nice. Then I also loved the speakeasy scene in New York, which was fantastic. Finding the hidden bars was
awesome.
Amazing, yeah. And the history behind it with the prohibition and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Now, New York's really renowned for its Halloween. I've been there for the Halloween parade.
And,
it's just absolutely awesome. Did you watch the parade or did you go in the parade with some groovy outfits on?
I turned into a little kid watching the parade. I loved it.
They're so good, aren't they? They know how to get their costumes.
It was a Monday night, so industry night, so we'd been, you know, having a few drinks that afternoon, and by the time it got to the parade, it was like 9 or 8 p.m. or something, and we were just so into it. We were just, like, cheering along with it and walking
around.
About
200 people synchronizing to the Thriller dance, walking along.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Loved it.
So many ghouls and goblins and witches and warlocks. They did.
As long as you were in uniform, you could jump in the parade.
Yes.
Like it was not an exclusive thing by any means.
No, I've been there. I went as Baby Jane and had a great time. It was absolutely one of the best things I've ever done. Okay. But, yeah, I highly recommend Halloween in New York to anybody.
It's a great time of the year. It's very fresh. You've got all the beautiful fall leaves. You've got all the incredible food. I mean, they have a whole array of particular dishes associated with that time of the year.
What was your favourite place to eat?
When you were off duty.
Oh, there was a really good pizza spot kind of on the border between Williamsburg and Bushwick called Roberta's, which was a little hipstery, but like amazing kind of beer garden, great pizza. They had their own little like Radio Shack in the back, and actually behind the restaurant was like a 2 Michelin star... What was it? Three Michelin star restaurant called Blanca, and just that pizza was great on days where we needed. We didn't know what we were going to eat. It was always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. Or there's one in, is it East Village or Lower East Side? Mother's Ruin always did the job. They had great waffle fries and burgers, and their kitchen was open till 4 a.m. So
yeah, everybody says New York doesn't sleep, but it definitely sleeps. And I found it hard to get food, like when you're finishing work so late. Mm. And this was the spot. Mm-hmm. Fantastic bar and food.
One thing I think the Americans do really well is that sandwich, the Reuben. Oh, you know when you're really super hungry? That you just,
so the Reuben there has pastrami, right, and pickle.
Yeah, it's like toasted sauerkraut and mustard on rye, just very simple. And I think you see attempted imitations in Australia, but it's kind of cold and it's thinly sliced. You've got your bread-to-meat ratio all out. And it's like you go to Katz's Delicatessen and you just get this like half a kilo of steaming meat in front of you and like a pickle as big as your arm. And that's what a pastrami sandwich is to me.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, sets the bar high.
It's one of the quirkiest things that when you return back to Australia and, you know, you go to the local milk bar and you get yourself a salad sandwich and there's one slice of tomato, one slice of cheese, one slice of ham. Having said that, you know, we're not into waste around here. Yes. So
Calorie counting as well.
That's right. It's very modest. Now, you would have eaten a lot of crazy food when you were traveling. As you just mentioned before, you did the archetypal drive from New York to L.A.
Yes. So we chose to fly out of L.A. So we kind of forced ourselves to do a little road trip, which is like our adventure at the end of all of this, because we only had a 12-month visa, and then you're allowed in the country for an extra 30 days after that. And we just thought, I want to see kind of real America, because New York isn't really America. New York is just New York. It's its own thing. Like it's crazy.
It's different to the rest of the country. It's incredible.
Yeah, we had I kind of based the road trip on food, like where I wanted to go. So we kind of went down through barbecue territory, and like each state kind of has their own little twist on barbecue. Like some place might be dry rubbed, or their barbecue sauce is mustard based. The next state is vinegar based. So it's all these kind of slight differences everywhere that made it really cool to...
Right. You know, I've got a cookbook for you.
Oh, really?
One of our guests was Jess Pryles, another Melbourne girl who has done really well and now lives down in... she lives in Austin. She is now a major woman on the scene in the barbecue world down there, and I have a copy of her cookbook, which I will give you for Christmas. The main reason I'll give it to you for Christmas is I ain't going to use it because I don't eat meat. But anyway,
you can barbecue veggies.
I know I can barbecue veggies, and she does have some really good vegetable dishes in there.
Nice.
So when you're saying you went down through barbecue country, give us some state names.
Okay, so North Carolina, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Charleston.
Yeah,
amazing.
Charleston in South Carolina is gorgeous.
Yep.
Then over to Alabama. Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yes.
Then
that's southern. Yeah, the southern drawl happening.
Twang.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And then up
Tennessee.
Yes.
Yes.
Tennessee and Memphis.
Then drove down to Texas.
Yeah, so that's when we did Austin, and Austin
Wow, so you really just didn't go straight across the state.
No, our map looks like
up, down,
Mr. Squiggle's
side.
Been on it.
Yeah.
it's not a linear line by any means.
No.
Yeah, and then Austin and Houston.
Our favourite was probably a bit outside Austin, Salt Lick.
Salt Lick Barbecue was, because I worked with a couple of southern people in a restaurant, and they've got a very famous barbecue spot called Franklin's there, and they'll have like a line for hours for it. It's kind of a tradition there, and I was just like, I don't really fancy the lineup. Where would you go? And they're like, you've got to check this place out. Mm. And it was just fantastic there, because it's like you ask for meat by the pound. That's how it is. It's like, I would like a pound of ribs, and I'd like
Whoa.
A pound of brisket, and give me 2 pounds of pulled pork. And it was so no the opposite of calorie counting there. Yeah, that blew our minds. And then up to...
We did the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Then drove through Napa Valley. And
all right, so then you went around up California that way.
Yeah,
did you take Highway 1 up the coast?
A little bit.
Yeah, we were going to check out Big Sur right near
where the intro of Big Little Lies is filmed.
Oh, right. Well, I have been to Big Sur as well.
But they've just had a bridge collapse, so we couldn't get there.
Oh.
Yeah, and a big, I think there was a landslide, a rock slide covering one of the highways. So instead of going straight there from San Francisco, you had to do, like, you had to go around it. And it was like a two-hour detour.
Right. Tell me you did all of this in a convertible.
We did it all in this tiny little hatchback bloody Hertz rental.
We had an Esky in that back, so we'd make, like, our cocktails? Lunch for the day.
You were doing a bit of a Thelma and Louise, weren't you?
if Thelma and Louise shared the driving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some very long drives. But, yeah, we had our little snacks and our Esky and our drink bottles, and then it became our wardrobe. And
take sandwiches out of there and put it under on your dashboard and it would get solar power heated. So mini toasted sandwiches in the car.
Exactly.
Which is, I like that.
Okay, all right.
Wow. And you stayed in...
travel tips here. These are travel tips.
Hotels, motels along the way.
A bit of everything.
Love the Airbnb scene, then we stayed with kind of friends of friends that we'd never met. Mm-hmm. So it was like we got the southern hospitality.
Oh,
like
it was incredible.
They just everywhere.
They
we
would have
stayed,
loved you guys though.
It was
you just had to open your mouths and they would have said Australians. Oh. God. You're welcome. You're welcome.
You ain't from round here. Yeah.
G'day, mate.
Yeah, we would stay with parents of colleagues that never met them before, and they were just like,
they took us in. They were
our adoptive parents.
Yeah, really lovely to us.
It was.
You know, I do say this every time someone's been to America on the show, because we've noticed a great big downturn in travel to the United States since the orange orangutans become president over there in the travel industry.
People are voting with their credit cards.
Yeah, they are. They're staying away. They don't see that he's in power that they should go there. But and I hear it time and time again when we have fantastic guests like you guys on that he might be there, but nothing good about America has changed, that you're still, you know, you're still meeting beautiful people and having an awesome trip and really enjoying yourselves, which is exactly what this road trip sounded like to me. So they shouldn't stay away because Don's there, should they?
No.
That didn't affect us. And fingers crossed it won't affect us going back, because I know he's clamping down on visas, so...
That's right.
Yeah, it could get interesting.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
On the Escape Hour, Joy 94.9. My name is Russ Masterton. The gorgeous Fiona Brooks in the I was going to say the office today. Feels a bit like an office, doesn't it?
And look, I spent 5 days in the office. Well, four and a half this week, and I'm quite done with the office.
We're both recovering from our Christmas parties because it's that time of the year. It's ho 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 time, and we're all, you know, just relishing in the fact that we've only got one more show before Christmas. It'll be our Christmas special.
Yep, that will be really fun and interesting to talk about what's been going on in food and travel this year, what we've done that we've really enjoyed. So that's what we're going to do next week. So if you want to hear us all crap on, we'll be doing that next week. And Tad will be back so he can tell us all about his trip.
Amazing. So we've got Al and his lovely girlfriend in the studio at the moment.
Marina.
Yes, that's right. And we're going to talk about travel tips. We've got a short time left. Do you guys fold or roll?
I'm sure in the back of the little rental car, you've neither folded nor rolled. You probably just threw.
You just make do.
Yes.
When I'm packing the suitcase, I roll. That was a tip, right? Because I've backpacked Europe as well.
Yes.
And that was a massive space saver, I think.
We can't get a conclusion on this one. Everyone seems to either roll or fold.
We've had numbers of people that go both ways.
Oh, well, that's what this place is all about, isn't it? Absolutely. I understand that. And what about driving? Did you ever drive on the right side of the road, which is our side? Was there any mishaps?
Maybe in the first 20 minutes, and then it was pretty easy to get. But then coming back again, now I'm kind of in that frame of mind on the other side of the road. It's only when nobody else is around, and I'll be thinking, is this right? No, I'm close to the curb. Oh, but I'm close to the wrong curb. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, my travel tip with driving is that I just sit in the driveway until I see another car coming. And then I know what side of the road I've got to be on.
Having driven in the United States myself, I concur that if there's no one on the road, you really have to think about it. But there is the old adage, which is you keep your wife in the gutter.
Oh, okay.
From the 1940s or 50s when only men drove, apparently. The idea is that if you keep your wife in the gutter on that side, then you're in the centre, then that's the side that you're
well,
on.
I kept my wife in the gutter as I was driving him out to the airport this morning. So, yeah, that's, that all seems to make a lot of sense to me. Guys, is it easy to go and live, work, play in America? Would you recommend it to our listeners?
Would recommend it. It's not easy. It's hard for a reason. Not everyone can do it. But if you've ever thought about it, go for it. What have you got to lose?
Yep. You need to go over there and try. Yep.
Yeah,
that's all you can
absolutely.
Do.
Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. Thank you, Marina and Al. And we will chat with you all next week.
Thanks for having us.
See you next week on The Escape
Hour.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.